And welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, everybody. I'm Paul Dottino. He is Howard Cross, at Howard Cross 87, at Giants WFAN. If you want to get a hold of us, you can go to Twitter. Or, of course, you can also go to Twitter and hit up hashtag Giants Chat, or dial us up at 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Here on Big Blue Kickoff Live as the Giants get ready for the Washington Redskins on Sunday. Once again, the game has been moved to 4:25. It was flexed out to the later afternoon doubleheader game on Fox. I'm sure everybody knows it by now, but we keep reminding you because, you know, people have an old schedule, Howard. They're looking at it. They think it's 1 o'clock.
I guess they do, but I'm pretty sure at this day and age of technology where you know things instantly, they probably knew it before we did.
Yeah, they may have. In any event, we'll quickly go over the injury report as we usually do to start the show. The Giants off of yesterday's practice, JPP still out with the core muscle surgery. Again, no update on him. Coach McAdoo said yesterday he has seen JPP. He continues to rehab, but has nothing to say until the medics tell him that there is something to say. Limited participation in yesterday's practice. You got Burhe and Goodson with concussions. Janoris Jenkins still nursing that back injury, but was limited. And Will Tye was limited by an illness. Other than that, no one else on the list, Howard.
That's good. It seems like we're actually coming around, getting really, really healthy. Hope those guys with the concussion protocol feel pretty good and got something special in their stocking so they'll feel better. Not that there's anything you can do to get better, but
no, not
you know
that.
What I'm saying? Just time. Time is the only thing you can really get.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, the Redskins, as you know, still need to win the game to have a chance to be a playoff team. They're looking to still sneak in as the number 6 seed. The Giants are the number 5. They are locked in. They cannot move up. They cannot move down. They know they are number 5. With mm-hmm. that, we open the phones at 201-939-4513. By the way, in case you are not in New Jersey and you're listening to us around the country or around the world on the web, we should tell you it's a bit of a chilly day today. Potential for some freezing rain this afternoon. It's been misting all morning. So I don't think Coach McAdoo is going to have practice outside. I think he's going to be inside the field house.
Oh, I was like, why are you telling me that? I don't have sideline duties today. I'm good.
Thank goodness for that, because Howard does not like inclement weather at all.
No, I do not. I'm from the south.
But I'm just letting you folks know, because I know a lot of you are not from the local area when you call in and watch us on the web. So the weather's not been great here today. I do think practice is going to wind up being inside. And, you know, that's simply because McAdoo says they can get things done better when they're inside, when the weather doesn't affect it.
You're trying to get as much of your stuff in, and you're working with your players. You only have so many days you can practice. The world has changed greatly, so when you have an opportunity to practice, you practice indoors and as dry as possible. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, and throughout the 90s to the 2000s, before there was an indoor facility, you know, that we practiced outside. And I can remember one year that I think it was Dan Reeves that the weather got so bad that we actually had to, like, you know, bus 45 minutes away to find a place to practice.
Down near Rutgers.
Yeah.
So, I remember that very well.
So it's you know.
Then they built the bubble, and they called it the Dan Dome.
Yeah. This day and age, you need time. Your franchises need places for your teams to go to practice.
Yeah. So the Giants, by the way, in case you're wondering, and I know it's been a big topic for speculation this week, and I do want to get to the calls in just a second. I do want to address Howard with this because he hasn't been on the show this week yet.
Uh-oh.
Coach McAdoo did say that if the guys are healthy, they will play. We're playing to win. We're coaches and we're players, and we work for a living, and playing games is what we do to work. And if guys are nicked up and banged up and the doctors tell them, you know, that it's better that they don't play, that's a different story. But Coach McAdoo is of the frame of mind right now that the Giants are going to try to win this game and play guys. And, of course, the media is having a feast with that because they're trying to guess how many snaps certain guys will play.
Well, do this for the media. For all media people who are listening, and if you want to check in or chime in, remember this. There are only 46 guys on the team that are active on any game day. So you don't really have a full allotment of guys. In preseason, you have 85 guys. So you can have a second offense, a second defense, a second offensive line, a second defensive line, you know, more than enough DBs, receivers, and everything else. If you go out and one of those guys that you decide to rest gets hurt, let's say that you let Eli play for a quarter, then you put the backup quarterback
Josh
in.
Johnson.
Yeah, you put Josh in, and Josh gets hurt. Then what do you have? See what I mean? So the ideal that you're going to rest all these guys, it's a misnomer. It shouldn't happen. You should play. Everybody that's healthy goes out and plays. That's what you do for a living. Play, play hard, go get it. Get ready for the playoffs. Get everything. You want to be as rhythmatic as you can going into the season. All this stuff about not playing and, oh, protect this guy and don't protect that guy, that came from announcers. That didn't come from players. That didn't come from coaches. That didn't come from GMs. That came from guys who are betting on games, and they want to make sure that their guy's in the game so their bet comes in.
Fantasy football owners, that's what that's
fantasy
about.
Fantasy and everybody else, but that's all that is. So when you hear announcers having a field day guessing like, oh, I wonder how much which guy's going to like that means nothing. Go play. Go. Like I used to get upset when they tried to take me out of the game. It used to bother me so much. I'm like, why are you taking me out of the game? They're like, well, you know, we're trying to get so-and-so. I don't care about him. I don't want to play. You know, so, and that was the rule. But, you know, the world's changing.
Well, Coach said yesterday, you know, practice is hard. Practice is work. Players want to play on Sunday because that's what's fun.
Well, that's the reward. You do all this. You do well, back when we could really get after it, you did all the harsh training. You did all the two-a-days of practice. You did all the hitting, the grinding, and all this stuff. And then the reward was you got to play against another team. So that was the whole theory of for us. Like, the reward was, hey, look, all that work we've done, today's your payoff. Let's go make it work. And you only get 60 minutes to make it work. So for a whole week of grind, and you get 60 minutes to have fun with it.
201-939-4513 is our phone number. We go to the phones, and Ken from Trenton is first on the show. Hello, Ken.
Hey, Ken.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Howard. How you guys doing today?
Very good. How are you, sir?
Good. Thank God. I don't get me wrong. I'm very, very happy that we're in the playoffs. Thank God for the New Orleans Saints and Drew Brees. And I don't question that Archie may have made a phone call to make sure Drew played a little harder that day.
so
funny. But with that said, going into the Eagle game, the Eagles' defense was the most penalized defense in the league. And then out of nowhere, after their season's over, they draw zero penalties on the defensive side of the ball throughout a game. I'm not trying to make anybody angry or anything like that, but are these referees vetted for what their favorite team is before they get into a game? Like, if they're Eagle or Dallas fans, I don't think they should be reffing that game, per se.
That's funny. I think that, you know, predominantly, and I always say this, no one likes a zebra. Like, no, like none of us like them. If they make a call for us, we like them. If they make a call against us, we hate them. And you never feel like you're getting the equal amount of good or bad calls, because it seems like the calls that are going against you are always going against you. But for the most part, and I do say for the most part, this is not 100%, but for the most part, believe it or not, they get more of the calls right than wrong.
They do.
We just don't like them when the ones that we think are wrong are going against us.
Yeah, well, I don't have a problem with them calling it right or wrong. As a matter of fact, I have a problem with them not calling anything.
Well, I actually watched
through the game like the Eagles played perfect, and I know they didn't.
Well, I've actually been on the sideline talking in the headset, but it doesn't go out to the audience, and I'll see a play called bad for the other team or something that you know that we're getting advantage of. I'm like, oh yeah, that didn't happen, and everybody's like, yeah, but you know that's what they called. I'm like, okay, but you know, but that didn't happen. So when that's happening to us, I don't want to hear later on that we're like, well, we don't know. But, you know, things like, for instance, like the Cam Newton hit the week before, and it was a big thing in the news, and Cam flips the ball at the guy, and then the kid went slides, and you know, and you see Apple, you know, sliding on his knees, trying not to hit him.
I know.
And then,
yeah, everything he could.
Yeah, and then they throw the flag. And
well, the Vernon penalty.
Yeah, but that's...
The flag came in late on that one, Howard. The flag came in after... Wentz decided to flop around and act like he was hurt.
Well, like I said, that's all part of it. I mean, part of it is being able to see if you can draw a penalty. RG3 says all the time that some of the hits look so violent. He goes, but they're not as violent as you think. It's more of me, you know, trying to get my Oscar for this is Oscar season. I'm like, okay, so I get it, but it's funny. The reason why, and this is just my opinion, the reason why the replacements refs were so – everyone was so crazy about them is because you don't have a book on them. See, every referees group, every group, everybody knows, okay, these guys call this, these guys don't call this, look for this.
There's
more.
There's a scouting report on each group.
You scout each group out. And the replacement refs, there are no scouting reports. So without
there shouldn't even be that, though. There shouldn't be these guys don't call this. There should be some consistency across the board.
Yeah, well, you got to know personalities of guys and what's going on.
So everybody's human, Ken.
You should be.
You should
scout them. If you don't scout them, then you're doing yourself a disservice by not, like, before the games, I don't know if they still do it, but back on Wednesday or Monday's practice after you've done the film. You've watched the past game, then you say, you know, give your little pre-speech before Wednesday's meeting, and you say, well, you know, just so you guys know, this is going to be the officiating crew, or Wednesday, whenever
correct.
It happened, this is going to be the officiating crew. They're prone to call X, Y, and Z. The guy, the line judge, he definitely calls holding, or you know, these guys call more pass interference penalties than anyone. Like, you know. Kind of what the group is doing, and you understand. Not that they're doing it more or less for any team. You just got to know what
tendencies.
You got to know which guys are doing what, so it helps you coach your team to, you know, to be ready for them.
Ken, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. I want to discuss something with you for a second, Howard, because he brings it up, and you know, my dad always says to me, and I don't talk about dad much on the show, but dad's a season ticket holder.
Okay,
and he.
God bless.
He loses his voice for about 2 days after every home game. Surprise, right, Howard?
I can't imagine that.
and what Dad always says to me is, well, the bad calls, the good calls, they'll all probably even out anyway over the season. Mm-hmm. And I argue with him all the time because, you know what, if a call is so egregiously wrong or a non-call is so egregiously wrong on, like, the final drive of the game – well, then there's no evening that out because it was on the deciding drive of the game. Like when Sterling Shepard was held 15 yards downfield and then had his arm hooked, there's no evening out on that. That's not cool.
Here's my view.
But here's what I want to ask you.
Okay.
Here's what I want to ask you. Then you give me your opinion. I want to ask you a question first. My question is, if in the last 2 minutes of a half or of a game, the official upstairs is allowed to buzz down for replays about turnovers and about scores and everything else, and he's the guy who can do that, why is the league not giving him the power in the last 2 minutes to also buzz down for what is an egregious non-call or call? Why not expand it to that so that if something is so blatantly obvious that everybody in the stadium saw, but the guys on the field didn't, why can't he buzz down in the last 2 minutes like he does for a replay?
So I'm going to help Paulie out. Like, he's a fan. He's a commentator. He's a lot of things, like a lot of other fans, not just of the Giants, of all sports.
This is a football question.
All sports, especially in football. I'll tell you, like I tell my kids, not everything works out for you.
Life is not fair.
Life is not fair. But in this specific case that you're talking about, there is so much that you can do before those last 2 minutes to ensure that that guy has no bearing on the game.
That is true also.
And if that's the case, then you can't worry about that one play. See, we were always taught that there are four or five plays in the game that will decide the game.
Parcells used to tell us that all the time.
So either they're your plays or a play against you or an officiated play. You make sure that none of those plays are officiated plays by taking care of your responsibility for all those four or five plays. You catch every ball. You make every block. You make the tackle when it's time to make the tackle. You don't lose a guy here in coverage. You don't drop a ball when a ball's thrown to you.
As Tom would say, the word is execution.
Yeah, you execute the entire game so that, you know, I always tell, you know, when I coach little kids and stuff, I said, take it out of the hands of everyone that's in your hands. You master this moment.
It's a good point, Howard.
So
I understand it.
The emotion of – I hear, like, everybody, the guys on Mike and Mike are talking about it. Everybody's like, oh, well, you know, in the last 2 minutes, if everybody saw it, like, yeah, dude, but the last 2 minutes is the last 2 minutes. You had – and you know, in the first half, you had 28 minutes to get that right.
But that doesn't make the call or the non-call that was missed correct.
But
it still doesn't make it correct.
If it's me and I'm playing so hard that call doesn't happen.
I understand that too.
If I take your theory and I apply it to my kids or to my friends or to my job or whatever I'm doing in life, then the moment that something goes wrong, I had all this time to make sure this didn't matter.
I can't argue that. I mean, that's prevent anything from ruining your day by taking care of business earlier. I get it. I totally get it.
Last 2 minutes,
but that still doesn't justify allowing a bad call to stand.
It's 100% justifiable. It's your mind, and this is me saying this. It's your mind that wants to govern what's happening at the end of the game.
Yeah, but you know what? At the end of the day, if a bad call's made like that in the final 2 minutes and it was missed, it does, because the NFL office is going to check down that referee. He gets a demerit for that call, and it does go on his report card. So, in fact, it does matter.
It doesn't matter.
Because it's a blown call that will be on his report card, and it will hurt him come playoff time.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me. It ain't costing me any money. If I play as hard as I can the entire time, if I do all I can do to get the game won, everything, then when the official makes the knucklehead call later in the game, then he may be making a call, and the game's already out of hand. I've already done it. But what you're doing is you want to – it's like the effect of the out – listen, the outcome of the game needs some human element. It's not always going to be perfect. You got to be willing to take, hey, look, a bad call's a bad call.
You understand there is one flaw, though, in the argument that my dad makes, and that is you could do everything right that you're supposed to do and still not pull away and blow a team out.
Yeah, but, Paulie, if that was the other way around, if the Giants were driving and Odell goes down and he shoves the cornerback and then catches one of those great catches and goes into the end zone,
right?
Where is your call?
If the call was not made and he committed offensive interference like Michael Irvin used to do all the time for the Cowboys,
but would you be
the king of offensive interference,
listen,
by the way.
Just listen, stay with me. Would you be as upset?
Yes.
You'd be upset.
I would be very upset because I'm an NFL guy. First and foremost, I love the game, Howard.
You'd be running down the field, high-fiving Odell, and he came back down. I'm just telling you, it needs the game. And if they do this, they're going to do a disservice to football.
All right.
You know why you watch? You watch to see if somebody's going to mess up. Then you have something to talk about. They'll eliminate part of your job if that doesn't happen. Forget about the referee getting demerit. You won't have anything to talk about, so that'll go away. You'll be sitting here going like, wow, that was a great game.
Okay, folks, so Howard and I are going to agree to disagree on this. I'd like the game to be cleaned up as much as it can be, but I do understand his human element,
play.
Theo, because you know my father agrees with you, Howard. So
play. Just
you,
play.
You're with him.
It's like, you know what it'd be like? If I'm playing golf and I'm out there, I hit one to the right. I'm like, can I get a mulligan? Like, I know it's a tournament, but look, I didn't mean to hit that ball in the woods.
See, you're not going to win an argument there because I don't play golf. Want nothing to do with it.
I know. But
Sam, you're next on the show. Hello. How
hey,
are you,
good
Sam?
Good afternoon, guys. And I kind of agree with both of you guys. On one hand, Howard, I agree with you. Life isn't fair, but, Paul, you're right. Games are meant to be fair. That's why everybody gets four downs.
No.
Everyone gets the same rules apply to everyone. But you're right, Howard. There's always the human element, and that is kind of frustrating when it's against you.
Exactly.
On the other hand, it is the best thing ever when it's for you.
It is.
So, you know, and speaking of that side, Howard, what we can control, I know Giants fans really haven't been very happy about not having the sixth best offense in the league this year. But I could tell you what, I think – there's a big reason why we're 10-5, which is a good record. 10 wins in this league is 10 wins, bottom line. And I think you got to give your hats off to this coaching staff. They have bought into the strengths of this team. I know a lot of people get tired of seeing the three wideouts out there all the time. But, hey, look, that's where most of our talent is. And I'd like to get your guys' take on Paul, I know you're an old-school guy because you're ground and pound, so am I, but I'd like to get your take on, you know, how has kind of sticking to our strengths, not trying to be something we're not this year. I mean, the reality is what it is. I mean, we've been able to get 100 yards here and there, but what's won us games is those crossing routes from Odell Beckham, the long pass versus the Saints that went to Cruz that set us up for the winning field goal. It's been, unfortunately, the passing game. So I'd like to get your guys' take on, A, has it really been us kind of buying into, hey, look, this is who we are this season. Let's make the best out of it. Or have you guys seen really, on the other hand, from an offensive perspective, it's been a little bit of a sprinkle of everything, offense, defense, and special teams. Would like to get your take on that, and I take it off air. Thank you guys for the time.
That great question. I'll tell you what, it kind of goes back to your bad play by the official at the end of the game. It's the human element. And the human element is that they don't run the ball very well. Now, why they don't run the ball very well, there are numerous reasons. But, you know, maybe the tight ends aren't as focused on blocking. Maybe they don't have quite the ability to block. Maybe somebody loses a guy in the middle. Maybe they're not finishing blocks. Whatever the human element is in that and the execution of that, they're not as, you know, prolific at running the ball. So the rest of the league, the rest of the pundits, the rest of everyone on the outside, they are like, well, we want them to run the ball. Well, if you go out there and sacrifice run the ball, you're in third and 10 or third and 12 almost every down. So you got to figure something out to make it work. Well, you know, you set up the run by – you set up the pass by running. Well, you can set up the run by passing. It's all kind of mixed in. I think that, you know, Coach McAdoo and the staff have understood what they have, where they are with things, and they're trying to, you know, get the most out of what they're working with. I think they've done a good job. 10 wins, going into the last game of the season, I think that's a pretty impressive job they've done.
Well, you know what, Howard? The one thing I would say is that I think at times this year they showed that when they went to the jumbo package with the bigger tight end, they went to the three tight ends with Newhouse third tight end. They showed at times when they were willing to do that, they could move the ball with a power running game on occasion.
I'll say this. It depends on who you're playing against.
Matchup is huge.
It depends on – and you can put all those big people on the edge you want. If you got a D-tackle that's a monster in the middle –
that's a problem.
Then you just get a problem.
That's a problem.
I tell people all the
time – I
agree with that. That, you know, a lot of people talk about how great the quarterback is and how important he is to the game. If you get an outstanding D-tackle that he's eating up two or three blockers every time and he's stepping on the toes of the quarterback every time he throws it, he can disrupt the game because you can't run around him. He makes you have to try to get to the outside, which gives your linebackers chances to catch up to the play. He you can't run up the middle because he's devastating to your running back every time he hits him. A monstrous, you know, unstoppable D-tackle could be the most you know, underrated position in the game. And I just think that we don't always understand, like, what's going on. Like, I don't even understand, and I'm watching the game on the sidelines, why certain things are being called and why they're not being called. And, you know, I'm as much of a fan as I'm watching the game as anyone else. I would love to say that I'm sitting there, and I'm, like, I watch film. I have clips that I just study and look at. But when I'm doing that, it's so much different. It's emotionless. There's no sound. I'm just watching it happen, and I'm looking at it. When I'm on the field, then the emotion of what's going on, I want something to happen, and I can't force it to happen.
No.
So I just got to watch and, like I said, be impressed at what I'm seeing.
While you were going through your answer, I wasn't ignoring you. I listened to you, but I wanted to look up something because it's
you
relevant to the question.
Me.
No, never ignore you. I may not always agree, but I always listen. Of the Giants' five losses so far this year, they ran for 100 yards or more as a team against Washington in week 3 and last week against Philadelphia. In their other three losses that they had, they did not. So they are two
games over 100 yards.
Two games over 100 during their five losses.
Yeah, but you know, the things that don't come into play when you're giving that stat's a hollow stat because how many turnovers are they having?
Well, exactly.
How many penalties
are they
having?
It's
a lot more to it than that.
But I give that to you only because it's a starting point for the conversation in that I do believe, and the Giants have run for 100 or more yards as a team in 5 of the last 7 games. They have clearly gotten better in terms of their balance in the last third of the season than they did earlier.
Yep.
And I think we would both agree, for sure, on this, they're better off when they're balanced. odds are better.
I think the odds are better, but it also gives Eli a break. That arm's got to get tired throwing that ball.
63
times. That's
7 drops.
It's still tiring. You know, it's still tiring. So you have to think about when you're putting the ball in the air that much, you need to be Cam Newton, basically. Big arm, big old tough guy that you can do that, but it's hard on the body.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Chris from Syracuse, you're next on the show. Hello.
Hey, how you guys doing? Happy New Year.
You
Happy
too.
Happy New Year.
Hey, thank you. I got a couple comments, a question I'll take off air if you guys don't mind. But
sure.
I got my blood all boiled up. I got to get back to work, I guess, because I just wanted to say, P-Dot, I couldn't agree with you more. Howard, I like what you're saying as far as, hey, you can keep it in control yourself and not leave it up to the refs. But to me, at that point in the game, it's irrelevant. You're down there. It's within one score. It's an egregious penalty. Same thing happened to Julio Jones earlier in the year. Might have cost the Falcons the game when I think it was Sherman handcuffed Julio Jones one hand behind his back. But
right.
So, I mean, that's I guess
it's criminal to let to, it's criminal to allow that to go uncorrected. I'm sorry. That's how I feel.
I'm going to say again, and I'm not meaning to disagree with you. I'm just going to say again. If you stopped it and try to change it every time, like, when is it going to be enough? Because once
you that's the one problem I will say, because I do agree
hard.
That it could get subjective here. Because I would say if it's a little hand checking or if it's a little something, let him play. But if you got a guy's arm pulled right behind his back, but to your point, Howard, now you're getting into, okay, well, where is the line? Is it all or nothing?
The key word that I like to use is egregious, but that's still subjective.
Yeah, but let's do it like this then. So why am I stopping the last 2 minutes of the game?
Well, I'm sorry. I happen to agree with your point there. I think
my problem there,
penalty like that should be called,
is that in the last 2 minutes of a game, there's not going to be enough time for the calls to even out.
Yeah, but
they are game deciding calls now in the final 2 minutes.
I'm sorry, Paul, but if you rely on the refs for 28 minutes, those last 2 minutes of every half.
I'm still relying on the refs because I'm telling you it's a ref upstairs who's got a buzzer.
No.
It's still an official.
Like
I'm still letting the officials deal with the game.
Either you're gonna call all of them and buzz down when you think something's wrong in the first quarter, the second play.
Chris, I don't want to get in trouble. Please, we'll let you finish.
So-and-so's holding somebody.
I know he's got to get back to work. Let Chris finish. Go ahead, Chris.
Look what I did. No, I'm on vacation. I'm saying I got to get back to work so I can't call in.
Okay. Well, if you're on vacation, that means the family's going to be mad at you.
Right. Okay, so real quick, my other comments were, and Paul, I've heard a lot of what you said about Eli this year. I agree. I'm a huge Eli fan. I think he's constantly got a bad rap, and there's a lot of things going on with our passing game this season, and you can't all hang it on him by any means. I will also say, though, that compared to the last few years, I think that we're given – I said this the other day when I called in – we're giving Eli franchise QB money, and I'm not sure that I've seen franchise quarterback play this season, and I just hope that it's a reflection of the entire offense and not the beginning of his decline. I am, like I said, I'm a big fan of his, but the reason I lead in with that is I really think that I can trace Eli getting off track back to that first game in Washington. And now this is just my opinion, but it's what I've seen. He slid up in the pocket and Chris Baker absolutely destroyed him in that game.
One of the hardest hits he's ever taken.
Yeah. And it was nasty. And since then, he settled in a little bit. But he has just had happy feet, and I really think that shook his confidence, and for good reason, because I think that the pass protection hasn't always been there. And then even when it is there, he's still hearing footsteps and everything. But I would really like to see us be able to kind of come back around full circle and actually get the offense running. And that leads me into my question real quick for you guys. We've definitely gotten better at running the ball. There's no doubt. I think that we need to stick with it a little bit more than we did in Philadelphia. But here's my question. One thing I've noticed is we've gotten better at running the ball, still don't see a lot of play action. And if we have seen any play action this year, it basically looks like it's kind of like either, we're in shotgun and maybe we're going for like a inside zone or a handoff up the middle, and then we try to hit something quick. And so my question would be, do you think that we can start moving the pocket around a little bit? Will that help? Because I just haven't seen us really moving the pocket. Eli's traditionally thrown pretty well on the run, and it's something that I feel like has been non-existent. And maybe it would help out with the pass protection. I guess that question's for Howard. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you, Chris. We appreciate it.
I would say that, you know, on the run, I don't think he's as accurate. I think that he is a little more, like, if his feet aren't set, he doesn't throw as crisp
his
a pass.
His mechanics get
a little messed up, and Eli will tell you that. I think that he likes to be as set as quickly as possible. As far as the play action goes, the play action resembles what run action they have. So if they set up and bring a tight end in, put another tight end in as fullback, and then they try to run play action off of that, well, the team hasn't really run the ball that much in that formation, so there's no play action.
You need to establish a baseline first.
People have to see you do something.
Exactly.
I think I was watching a college game the other night. They ran a jet sweep maybe three times. They handed it off to the back going downhill. They handed it to the jet sweep, and on the third time, when they faked it to the guy that was going down, they faked the sweep. The teams were, like, following the guy to the sideline, and they just threw the ball over the top because everybody was like, because you've run it three times, the defense gets used to seeing it.
They have to respect it.
Yeah, well, they respect it, but they're getting used to see it, so they're, like, trying to get to the spot to stop it or be effective on it. You know, the linebacker step up to take the dive. The guy on the outside, like, screams over. The safety pulls down to try to help if he's going to get to the edge. And all of a sudden, there's a ball over the top. I mean, but that's when you do things over and over. And if you're running 11 personnel and you're usually running a dive or a dive trap inside, then that's the formation and that's the kind of look that you're giving teams. And that's what you're trying to establish. You're trying to – when you're doing that, the linebacker steps up. So it creates a little bubble in the middle of your defense. So that's what they – if that's their main run, then that's the play action they're going to get off of it.
And, you know, it's a shame because for years it had been said universally around the league that Eli was one of the best play action quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Without this consistent running game that they no longer have, how are you going to have, like what Howard just explained to you, how are you going to have a really great play action if the running game has been sporadic?
You know,
it's a lot harder to do.
And not to go back in history. Not to go back in history, but in 2011, the Giants were the worst rushing team.
Oh, they were 32?
Yeah.
But as David Deal would tell you, down the stretch, they ran for 115 yards a game.
Yeah, but that was
– they picked it up.
Because everyone got used to them not being able to run the ball.
And then they started doing it.
Then they started running and getting a little success.
Get a little push.
But once you got a little success, then all of a sudden, you don't have that on film to study.
And it really helped them in the postseason.
Yeah, it changed
big time.
You're trying to study and get ready for these guys, and all of a sudden they run the ball. So you got to respect the run. You start stepping up, like, well, I didn't know they could run. You step up, and that's plays start happening. Man. But that's not it. Like, now we're starting to show over 100 yards a game, over 100 yards a game, over 100 yards a game. Teams are starting to adjust to look for the, you know, okay. So if this run is effective, make sure you see whatever they need to see, whether it's the guard pulling, whether whatever it is. Make sure you see it. So it's different.
All right, back to the phones. Kevin from Orlando is next on the show. Hello.
The happiest place on planet.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Very
I got
good.
2 points I want to make, but I can't let Howard off the hook.
Go ahead.
Howard, I do understand your point of view with the referee calls and all that, coming from a player perspective. As a coach, you have to tell your players, don't leave it in the hands of the officials.
It's true.
You take care of your own business. Mm-hmm. But obviously I side with Paul because I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also nowadays, though, teams, there's way more parity in the league. Teams are really not more than four or five plays better than most other teams, unless you're the Cleveland Browns.
Okay.
So one or two plays really has more of an impact on the game now,
Kevin, I agree,
than I think it did 15, 20 years ago.
Okay, so let me say this. I have a son who's a pretty good football player. If I go through his film and watch and say, like, well, hey, look, if the referee takes it out of your hands, there's nothing you can do about it, well, they should be able to do something about it. And my whole argument is that if you're going to check the last 2 minutes of the game, check the entire game. You're like, the officials are the officials for a reason. They get most of the calls right. When they get one wrong early in the game, you're not as upset. And you're like,
just hold on.
Let me finish.
We're going to get him, Kevin.
When they make a mistake early in the game, you're not upset because in your mind, well, we have a chance to make that up.
Exactly. And because over the course of the four quarters, maybe it will even out.
Just hold on.
It won't in the last 2 minutes.
Just hold on. It's if you got three or four bad calls for you early in the game, and then in the last 2 minutes, you get a bad call against you. Well, the three or four calls that got you in a position to be for this bad call to affect the game, does that matter to you now? Like, you're not able to weigh it.
Depends what the score is at that time.
But see, that's a fan. Again,
as a coach, I feel that way too.
Just listen. You can't weigh it the way you guys are saying, because if there are three or four calls that are affecting the flow of the game early in the game, and you're angry and you're upset, and then at the end of the game, a bad call makes you win the game, then it just doesn't add up.
No, but it's not okay, because if you love the game, you want the game to be decided by the players, not by a horrible call that came down in the final 2 minutes
of
the game.
But that's what the officials are. They're people. They're going to make mistakes. Not all of them. You watch. If there were like 16 games a week, there's one game where there's a penalty that freaks you out because, I can't believe he did that. Like, that's what they got instant replay for. You know where instant replay came from? Because the guy got tackled in the Jets-Seattle game and put his knee down. And they're like, okay, we're going to start doing instant replay. It just, you can't start to govern the game's last 2 minutes different than you do the rest of the game. Because then the rest of the game doesn't matter.
Yeah, but they're already doing that because they're giving the guy upstairs in the final 2 minutes of the half and the end of the game. He's the one who can only buzz for replay. So they've already changed the rules.
But he's buzzing for replays for completions and touchdowns.
Yeah, but they've changed the rules because that's no longer in the officials' hands on the field.
Do you know why?
So they've already changed the rules.
You know why they're doing that? Because during the game, if there's a moment in the game where a guy is challenged for a first down or a down to go, if a guy is challenged for a catch or not a catch, or if a guy is challenged, well, scores, they check scores anyway.
Checking scores anyway.
But all the other challenges, you have time, and the officials and the replays are all happening that the coaches can say, I'd like to challenge that.
Absolutely.
I'd like to challenge it because it's going to take time. And if there's a question of a play at the end of the game, they're like, hey, look, take it out of the coach's hands now. We're just going to challenge every possession play. That's the difference. You're not challenging judgment calls. You're challenging whether a guy caught the ball before he went out of bounds, whether he made a catch to the ground, or if it's a touchdown. You're not challenging judgment calls. You're challenging actual if there's possession or not possession. What you want to do is you want to go from the possession to the actual plays. It's different.
If it's a fourth down play. If a receiver's getting hooked 15 yards downfield on a fourth down play and there is no call made, that's a change of possession play.
These guys
that's
push
equivalent to a turnover.
Look. You're like, this is the term that
– Kevin, I'm going to let you finish here.
This is the term that the broadcasters came up with. They're letting them play.
Let them finish.
So I'm good.
Go ahead, Kevin. You good?
Go ahead.
No, so what I was going to say was I'm not really necessarily believing that they should instant replay everything. I'm just saying, Howard, look at it from the point of a fan. I'm not saying referees are better or worse than they were 15, 20 years ago, but due to the parity in the league, and I guess TV equipment has been better so we can see these plays at multiple angles way more than they are, calls like that stand out and make much more of an impact on the overall
totally
game
agree, Kevin.
Than they used to. And how you fix that, I'm open to discussion. I'm not saying instant replay everything or anything crazy like that.
I think it just gives
Thank
us,
you, Kevin.
I agree, Kevin. I think it gives us a point to discuss. I just don't think that it does anything
okay.
for the game any different.
Thank you, Kevin. Really appreciate it. It was a good phone call. I will say this. I'm not just a complainer about the officials, Howard, because I actually have a system that I've suggested to George Young when he was VP of the NFL many years ago that would actually improve the officiating, and it was all about taking NCAA players who weren't necessarily good enough to play in the NFL but had played the game, understood the game, and were athletic enough that they could be in the speed of the game and recruit those guys, make them full-time officials, recruit them, take them to school, give them full-time salaries, and I'll tell you what, those guys would be better officials, I believe, on the whole, than what some of what we're seeing right now. But That's an overhaul of the system. George didn't want to go there.
I think that
it is what it is.
I think that you're very novel in your hatred of the Zebras. You hate the Zebras way more than any player does by listening to your conversation.
I don't hate. Some of my good friends are Zebras. I don't hate them at all.
I'm just going to tell you.
I just hate when things aren't right.
I'm just going to tell you that the speed of the game happens. And sometimes the speed of the game, you're watching a lot of different things. Now,
a guy who played wide receiver at Florida State, mm-hmm. who couldn't make the NFL, I'd much rather have him officiating a call in the defensive secondary than some guy who's 58 years old and is a tax accountant during the course of the week.
So let me help you out.
Because I think that former Florida State DB or receiver can not only keep up with the speed of the game, he understands it better, and he's going to make the proper call.
So the guy
that's all I'm saying.
The guy that you're talking about, if he's a receiver, he's going to call the play for Shepard. If it's a DB, he might say that's a great play.
Well, he's going to get graded, though, too, just like anybody else is. And if he shows a propensity to going to the receivers, he's going to get downgraded for it.
Well, then that's what happens with the officials we have now.
Yeah, but the problem is there's only a certain level that those guys can achieve because of either their age, their physicality, their conditioning. They're missing a lot of stuff. And sometimes they just flat out can't keep up. You're going to tell me a 22-year-old guy from Florida State.
For next Thursday, let's move on to the callers.
But you can't tell me a 22-year-old guy from Florida State isn't going to keep up with a play better than some 58-year-old tax accountant. So, of course he is.
So the tax accountant goes home. He's got his wife, his kids. He works all week. And then, you know, he gets to do whatever they have to do to get ready for the game. A 22-year-old is going to be out drinking and partying all week, and then he's going to come back for the game.
That's why you have to recruit these guys. They got to be special guys. They can't just be anybody. They got to be guys who really have a love for the game.
Can we go back to the callers? You guys are all lost your mind.
Andrew, you're next on the show. Hello.
I cannot believe this.
Hey, look, it's a dead week. The Giants are waiting to get to the playoffs.
Please talk about something.
We need something to talk about.
Give me anything. Please get away from the officials.
Go,
please.
Andrew, go.
Paul is not a zebra-ist. That means he's prejudiced zebra.
Oh, my goodness.
But I like Paul's idea. His idea, I admit, because elderly guys trying to run downfield.
Have you seen a play yet? Wait a minute.
All jokes aside, the upstairs guys can review plays. And so I like those. Definitely agree with Paul. And I want to say, speaking of the running game, Ahmad Bradshaw came on hot. That was awesome in 07.
Yep.
Or 2011, I mean. And maybe with Paul Perkins and Rashad Jennings, we could have a similar, like, one-two punch.
Yep, we can
Brandon
only hope.
Jacobs. Yeah, and the big guy, Brandon Jacobs, and the smaller guy.
Andrew,
and
I'll
Darth
say this.
Vader, I call
Go ahead.
Mr. Cross, affectionately Darth Vader, because he was big and intimidating and taller than everyone and strong and stiff, so your son would be Luke Skywalker. It turned out that he was your son. But we need more. I talked to you about the running game and Will Tye being a fullback, and he lines up as fullback, but he never stays in the I formation. He always motions out. So I really don't recall any plays where – they actually had a fullback, even an offensive guard, just line up. And it's very bad if you can't, if a third and two has to be a passing play. So I'm optimistic, though, because like you guys were saying, the jumbo package, they've run the ball better, but you think they'll actually have a fullback for a few plays. And as far as the Cowboys, that's my question and my comment, and I'll let you go. The Cowboys, Jason Garrett, with 6 or 7 minutes left running up the score, with the starters and the offensive lineman got injured. You know, it just seemed like a low-class maneuver on his part. So now I have a vendetta against him, even though I like the young stars like Prescott and the running back and Ezekiel Elliott, but just seemed like it was mean. So I hope the Giants really pound them if they get a chance to match up in the playoffs.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you. I think
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I think that, you know, that you, like I said, you play to win the games. You play as long as you can play. And if you have your guys in, you let them play. If in that game, if they would have taken some of their linemen out, taken Zeke out, and taken out Dak, mm-hmm. you know, then you put Romo in, which you're hoping he's a trade bait, and then he could get hurt. Once he gets hurt, then his you got a $20 million quarterback on your team that's not playing. He's injured, and once he's injured, you can't just like, oh, give me your money back. It's just so you got all that stuff you got to worry about. As far as a player getting hurt, Nick, there's a chance for injury almost every play you're on the game. I remember one time, I won't call the player's name, he got hurt in warmups. I know another player that got hurt getting out of his stance. So
I've heard of similar stories.
So you don't know when, where, why, or how. Just, you know, I was blessed that I played through a lot of stuff but was able to play. I don't think that, you know, for all the fans, you can't play the game thinking, I'm playing not to get hurt. I hope this guy doesn't get hurt. You play the game and play as hard as you can. If there are guys that have the ability to get some work, you work them in. If you have guys that you look, okay, if I work him in, he gets hurt, then I don't have a backup. You just got to play the game.
I think the comment you made about the Giants running, I will say this. Rashad Jennings has been in the league now for 8 years, mm-hmm. and he has made a very strong point time and time again these last couple of weeks at how he has never been to the postseason. And this is like opening up a present on Christmas almost. It's like seeing Santa. I mean, this is a big, big deal to him.
Yeah.
So I have no doubt that whenever he's in the game, he's going to be going at 250% because this guy is so appreciative of this opportunity. He's literally like jumping out of his cleats.
Yeah, I remember my second year in the league, there was a player on the team, still a buddy of mine, love him to death, Everson Walls.
Yes.
Had played for Dallas for years through the really, really bad Dallas years, and he came over to the Giants, and we were in the playoffs, and we were making a run for the Super Bowl, and he was so, so excited. I think even the picture on the front of the Sports Illustrated is him with his arms in the air walking.
He's jumping higher than the stadium.
Yeah, so, it you know, you get guys that work real hard, and they go through it, and they're trying. It's not this. It's not a given. Only the Patriots are a given. Everybody else has to work really uniquely and hope that that you get there. And I don't think people appreciate how hard it is to have, you know, you only get the 53 guys and you plug and play trying to pull guys in off the street and from other rosters during the season, trying to get enough guys together to make the right marriage of people and the right mixture to get plays to happen. And I don't think people realize how hard that is. Some teams look like they're doing it. They're extenuating circumstances, but most of the time it's the quarterback, like Eli Manning, and an offensive line, and then a pretty good defense. Like the last couple of years, there was a pretty good There was a pretty good offense, you know, top 10 in the league, mm-hmm. in the league. Then the defense was like struggling. Now the defense is playing better than the offense is playing as well. So it's really hard to get all these guys in at the same time.
All right. I know you have a lot of Twitter comments here, but, folks, we are got the lines just going crazy like a mm-hmm. Christmas tree.
Go ahead.
So I want to try to get to
people,
the calls.
People are beating on me on the refs. Go ahead.
Lloyd from Philadelphia. I know you want to talk about the referees. I don't want to argue with you, Lloyd, so I'm going to let you go.
No, you did this.
There's no argument. It'll be quick.
Okay.
First, I want to say thank you to Howard Cross. And, you know, he is exactly the type of tight end that Eli needs.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that he would be, well, and I know you can't play anymore, but or you don't want to play anymore.
Oh, no, bro, I can't play anymore. I can't run out of this building. Paulie had to pull me out if something goes wrong.
He has trouble keeping up with me on the sideline.
I got you.
Everybody does, right. Paul. It's not just me.
Now, I just wanted to say before I make my point that I think that, Howard, you have the perspective of somebody who's been there and done that. You have a Super Bowl ring.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look back and you can, as almost like a teacher, see what the students, and the students are the guys that are out there right now trying to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. You know what they have to get done. So I understand your perspective on it. But this isn't just me as a fan speaking here. I saw the game as being completely all of the advantages that we have were negated. The Eagles wide receivers, they may not bring any of their wide receivers back next year.
Okay.
They may not bring any of their defensive backs back next year.
Well, Matthews will be back for sure. But anyway, I understand your point. It's not a great core.
No. Now, our cornerbacks can run with any of their wide receivers at any time without having to resort to any penalties. They mugged us all game, the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
Our wide receivers are good enough that they can beat any of their defensive backs at any time.
Okay.
But they mugged us all game.
Okay.
So the analogy that I came up with, and I did this while I was on hold, if you have a cop that's 2 minutes away from going home, he's hungry, he's tired, he wants to see his family, somebody zooms by doing 50 miles over the speed limit, it's an egregious foul for that person to be going that fast. They could kill themselves or someone else. Would you want him to stop that person or just let it go and say, you know what, it's time for me to go home?
Ha, that's a great analogy. Doesn't apply, but that's a great analogy. And this is why it doesn't apply. What you answered your own question. You said that during the game, the officials allowed the DBs, in your opinion, to hold and molest the receivers of the Giants for the entire game. But you want to change what they're doing for the last 2 minutes. It's like watching a LeBron or a Steph Curry play, and they know what's the fouls that are being called the entire
game. I did want them to make those calls all game long.
That's true, though. But what I'm saying is, if that's what you're dealing with throughout the game, you're not going to get a difference at the end of the game. And I think the consistency of that is what makes the game the game. Like, okay, so you know that these guys aren't calling pass interference. If they're not calling it, they're just not calling it.
So that makes it right?
It's not that it makes it right or wrong. It's like the scouting report. If you go into a game, you go to the sideline, hey, look, guys, they are letting us play a little more aggressively. Hey, get him off of you. Hold your hand out. And if he calls it, then you start something.
I got no problem with incidental contact, but when you're playing do-si-do, hooking guys' arms, that's a big problem for me.
Just remember, I'm telling you this. If they did it the entire game, you can't go down to the last 2 minutes and change it because you think it was affecting the outcome of the game. The entire game affected the outcome of the game.
That's true.
Held them the whole game.
That's true.
He just said that.
That's true.
Then let's move on. Thank you for that. That's great. I'm glad you said that. You made my point for me. I'm good. I'm solid. Smoke them if you got them. It's over.
Paul, we're not going to win this one, Paul.
It's okay. Thank you for the call.
He did it for me. Drop the mic. I'm just joking.
Jeff from Florida is next on the program. Hello.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great. How are you, sir?
Man, we need a referee between us.
Nah, we're good. Me and Howard are good. It's okay.
We're going to box
it. Yeah, Tom's left town, so everything's okay now.
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. I've been a Giants fan. My dad used to take me to the Giants Stadium at Yankee Stadium. I've been to the old Giants Stadium.
How about Yale Bowl?
My friends have season tickets. I've been on the field one time because my friend got me out on the field.
Nice.
I've been a Giants fan all my life, and I never say anything bad about the Giants. Hopefully this week they'll win, and that way they'll get into the playoffs and be on a roll because I have faith in the Giants.
Well, they're in the playoffs. I hope that they win. I hope, you know, what I really hope in this game, I hope that they come out of this game really, really healthy with a lot of positive things going forward. The win would be great too, but I'd like for them to have, you know, all of a sudden they may be rushed for 130 yards.
The line is playing better.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, Pugh came back.
Yeah.
Hopefully they could run the ball with both the running backs and get over 100 yards, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
I like it. I like it.
You know, I love our defense, though. And as long as, you know, we keep them under 17 points, we have a chance to win.
I think so. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see how these defensive backs handle these two receivers, three receivers, actually, and their tight end. So I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, Jeff. I think we got to run because the phone connection wasn't sounding too good.
I think Jeff was outside doing something for the wife, you know, and snuck out to call us.
Diego is on line 4. Hello. Hi, Diego.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Great. How are you?
Diego, Happy New Year.
Good, good. Thank you. You as well. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I will say that I do like the older referees. You know, I can't imagine a 22-year-old on the field tweeting and taking selfies while trying to make a call.
Diego, you're my man, Diego. He just crushed you. I'm dropping the mic to Diego. That was awesome.
I have no answer for that one.
That was a millennial hit right there.
You know what? I'm still in my 20s, and I would say, God, you know, people my age without technology, we can't make any decisions. So,
You know what would happen?
To the older guys.
You know what would happen? The back judge, he'd be like taking his own instant replay video with his phone as the play's going on. Right?
The joke that he's making is that, you know, we don't do a lot. It's a generational thing, he's saying. I like it.
Go ahead.
As an old guy, you should too.
Yeah. I just have two comments and one question. I mean, my first comment is that, you know, I think that, you know, all the starters should play this week and they should play to win. You know, I think when the season only being 16 games, you know, it's not like baseball or basketball. You know, baseball you have 100-plus games where, you know, if you rest one game, it really doesn't matter that much. You know, I think winning, you just can't turn it off and turn it on. And especially going down to Philly and losing, I think this game is going to mean a lot to the Giants just to, you know, have that good feeling going into the playoffs.
Yep. I like that, too. Go ahead with your question. Go with your question.
No, and I think my other comment was that, you know, I was kind of looking at the stats from the, you know, the 2 years of the Super Bowl runs, and maybe I'm wrong or I'm right, but in 2007 for Eli Manning, his passer rating was 73.9, 23 touchdowns and 20 interceptions during the regular season. And this year, you know, he's 26 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, and a passing rating of 86.2. So, you know, I think that people forget that Eli Manning wasn't, you know, Aaron Rodgers during those 2 years where the Giants won the Super Bowl. It was more in the playoffs where something clicked and, you know, he just, you know, he played amazing and made the plays he had to make. So I guess following to that comment, my question is, and for you, Paul, and Howard, since you guys, you know, you get to go into the locker rooms, do you see anything different from Eli Manning typically when playoff comes, or is he kind of the same, you know, demeanor kind of guy, you know, throughout the regular season and the postseason?
I think he cheers a little bit more now when he makes a good play. I think that's the biggest thing that I've noticed. But, you know, I go all the way back to his days at Ole Miss. I played in the SEC. Ole Miss was not an SEC champion, I don't believe, while he was there. So he had a lot of the Alabama, LSU years, a lot of the, you know, the big schools getting after him year in and year out. It kind of, you know, galvanized or sharpened his sword a little bit to learn how to play with seemingly when you have a pretty decent team, but playing against guys that are playing for the championship seemingly every week. I think that kind of made him stronger mentally and emotionally as well. Not to mention having a father that, if not for the poor teams that he was on, would probably have been a Hall of Fame quarterback himself. Having a big brother in Peyton that's a Hall of Fame quarterback. I think all those things together help him be who he is. That all shucks kind of attitude, that real calmness about him, I think that serves him probably better than anything else, because it's hard to get a temperature reading on him because he's almost always the same guy, which makes it awesome. Now, as far as, like I said, the playoffs goes, he seems to like, okay, I'm going to get beat up. And he kind of takes it in like, I'm going to get beat up. Let's see what happens. And he goes after it. There were hits on him and grabs. I think I always look back on him in that Niner game. He took a pounding, but he kept playing. And he kept grinding through, and he got success, won the Super Bowl. So it stands to reason that he probably, somewhere in his makeup, thinks the further I go along the season, the more I know I got to hang in there a little bit more. So we'll see what that is and how that plays out.
I think the one thing I'd like to add to what Howard just said is that we all recognize Eli is one of the more cerebral quarterbacks in the league, and he studies as hard, if not harder, than anybody does in the league at the quarterback position. I mean, the extent to which he prepares for a game is just exhausting. And when you get to the playoffs and you're playing the best of the best and some of the really good coordinators, that serves him well, Howard. Mm-hmm. It really does. And some of the quarterbacks who may not prepare quite as much as he does, maybe that's to their detriment. I just know that Eli never believes that he goes into a snap or comes out of a huddle and he's not prepared. He believes he's ready for anything whenever he breaks the huddle.
I think that, you know, his coaching throughout his life, from the guy down at Duke that helped him out.
Cutcliffe, yeah, David Cutcliffe.
Yeah, Cutcliffe, Peyton, I think he has a lot of examples of how to prepare for games, and I think that's a good thing. I think that is a good thing. I don't question other players preparing. I don't think that.
Yeah, I don't want to do that, yeah, but it would be hard for me to believe they prepare harder than he does. That'd be hard to believe.
One more time, I'm not questioning. I think that, you know, as a former player, that I know that Eli is the quarterback. I can remember, like, going home, taking all my films back when we had the VCRs and sticking those tapes in.
I still have one.
Oh, my goodness. I don't still have one. And sticking those tapes in and running them all night and sitting around and not going out because I needed to get my film work in. And I was on my own, a single guy. And people are like, what are you doing tonight? Oh, you know, I'm just hanging around the house. I'm watching tape.
Right.
You know, taking a few notes, watching tape. And I can remember when the scouting reports were, like, you would get a scouting report. It was like a little book, and you could read through on each player, what the player's tendencies were, his strengths and weaknesses. It's kind of like that little clip you get, but a little bit longer, of what players are like at the draft. They tell you all the good, then they tell you all the bad.
Right.
And, what he did, some of his accomplishments. We would get those, mm-hmm, for games. Especially if a player had a big game or especially if he shows that he can't do something, we would have that and we'd read that and we studied that. So, you know, it was a process like Eli. So I think Eli, I don't know what the rules are now and how they do it. I think everything's electronic now, so you don't.
Yeah.
You go home with your iPad.
Exactly. Tablet.
You know, yeah, tablet. So,
Diego, thanks for the call. Happy New Year. We appreciate it.
Thank you. You as well.
Oh, it's
Take care.
Microsoft Bye. Tablet. Make sure we say it. Windows tablet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a Windows.
Right.
Windows.
We are conforming to the NFL nomenclature.
We don't want any problems.
No problems. No, we have enough problems on our own.
Yeah, we got the referee problem.
Okay. Folks, Big Blue Kickoff Live is here on Giants.com every Monday to Friday from 12 noon Eastern Time till 1 p.m. 1 hour of Giants talk. Jot down the number 201-939-4513. On Twitter, it's hashtag Giants Chat. Again, he's at Howard Cross 87. I am at Giants WFAN. That's it for today's show. We'll see you again tomorrow. Be good, everybody.
And remember, refs are people too.
I know.